Tonight's invocation will be given by Pastor Craig
Hill of Taft Avenue Community Church, to be followed by the Pledge of Allegiance given by Mayor Pro Tem Dennis Bilodeau. Please stand.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let's pray. Our great God, we gather this evening in our council chamber where decisions are exercised and rightfully made for our city. For this reason, we think it's appropriate that we begin coming in a posture of humility before you, recognizing that the many things we have to be thankful for in our lives and in this community are the result ultimately of your graciousness to us. We're reminded that you're the giver of life, every breath, every heartbeat. So we begin with the simple prayer of thank you. And we turn to another simple prayer for this chamber, one that we've probably each uttered to you in our lives, and that is the prayer, help. We are reliant on you to do what we are unable to do in our own power. We pray for Mayor Slater, Mayor Pro Tem Bilodeau, Council Members Barrios, Dimitru, Tavolaris, Gutierrez, and Gillenhammer, that they would love justice and that their decisions here would promote human thriving in our city. Grant them the wisdom necessary to make the decisions they must. We have many things on our minds as we come into this chamber. We're reminded of the political divides that exist in our communities and in our nation. And we come to ask you to open our eyes to the humanity of our political rivals and build in us a compassion for each other that transcends politics. Finally, we ask you, our great God, that we might honor you in this chamber today as we pause to recognize the overwhelming value of each person in the city of Orange, and that comments from tonight's contributors and council members would honor the inherent human dignity of every person here today, regardless of their position on any matter. And I pray these things in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Please place your hand over your heart and say with me,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pastor Hill. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Present.
Councilmember Barrios. Councilmember Tavolaris.
Here.
Councilmember Gutierrez.
Here.
Councilmember Gillenhammer.
Here.
Mayor Slater.
Here.
A quorum is present with Councilmember Dimitru excused.
Thank you. We have a couple presentations tonight, but the first one is proclamation recognizing the second week of October as Code Enforcement Officer Appreciation Week. Yay. Yeah. They've got a tough job, but they do it well. Whereas the state of California has proclaimed the second week of October as Code Enforcement Officer Appreciation Week in California, and whereas code enforcement officers provide for the safety, health, and welfare of the residents, visitors, and businesses of the City of Orange through the enforcement of local codes or ordinances on any variety of issues, including building, zoning, housing, environmental health, and life safety, and whereas code enforcement officers have challenging and demanding roles and often do not receive recognition for the job they do in maintaining our quality of life, and whereas code enforcement officers are dedicated, highly trained professionals committed to preventing neighborhood decline, enhancing community well-being, ensuring public safety, and preserving property values through the enforcement of housing, zoning, building, and nuisance regulations, and whereas code enforcement officers serve in a highly visible capacity within the City of Orange, consistently delivering quality customer service and demonstrating professionalism in their interactions with the public and officials at the federal, state, county, and local levels, and whereas the City of Orange seeks to recognize and honor the dedicated code enforcement officers who serve our community, and to acknowledge their vital role in upholding the standards that preserve the high quality of life we all enjoy. Now, therefore, I, Dan Slater, Mayor of the City of Orange, on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim the second week of October 2025 as Code Enforcement Officer Appreciation Week. Accordingly, we encourage our residents and businesses to join us in applauding these fine individuals and thanking them for the dedicated work they do in our community, dated this 14th day of October, and signed by me. And I would like to invite forward our Community Development Director, Russell Bunim, the big boss, Rafael Perez, who heads up the code enforcement team, and Adam Davis to accept this proclamation. And the council is welcome to join me if you like. So with the new school year, we have the introduction of our 2025-26 high school liaisons and school updates. And I would first like to introduce our new El Medina High School liaison, Dylan Platfoot. Come on up, Dylan.
So hello, my name is Dylan Platfoot, and I'm here representing El Medina High School. So recently, voters registration week just came to an end, the 26th of September, starting the 15th, and it successfully informed the students here at El Medina the opportunities given with the ability to pre-register to vote. And then we also had a blood drive that took place October 1st, ran by the Red Cross, and it allowed our campus to give back to the community through donating blood. And then we also had Arts and Education Week that happened the week of the 29th with various FAPA groups on campus, like having a spotlight on them. And also, last week on the 6th was College Application Day. And during College Application Day, there were representatives from colleges that came to help students with the processing of applying, or with the process of applying to Cal State's UCs and trade schools. And then we also had our homecoming week last week, and it was a whole lot of fun. Every single day that week, we had a different dress-up day leading up to homecoming. And then lastly, on Friday, we had our homecoming football game, which the theme was blackout, and that also led up to homecoming. And then congratulations to Kylie Tofua, who won our El Medina's High School Homecoming Queen of 2025.
All right.
That's it.
Thank you, Dylan. And welcome. And from representing Orange High School, Jacob Gonzalez.
Good evening, City Council. My name is Jake Gonzalez, and I'm proud to represent Orange High School, and I'm excited to share a few highlights from our campus and our school community. On October 4th, we hosted our homecoming dance on campus. It was a huge success. We had an amazing student turnout, and our Rio theme brought vibrant decorations, great music, and tons of school spirit. Our athletic programs are thriving this season. Our girls' flag football team is currently 14-2 and heading into CIF with strong momentum. Our boys' season standing at 4-2, and along with golf, water polo, and volleyball, continue to make our school proud both on and off the field. Additionally, Orange High School participated in the annual Love Orange event. Our ASB team helped with the setup and organization. It was a great opportunity to connect with the community and give back in any way we possibly could. Thank you for your time and for all you do to support our schools and students. If any of you would like a tour of our newly renovated campus, I'd be more than happy to. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you so much, and welcome. All right. That ends our proclamations. At this time, members of the public may address the council on matters not listed on the agenda within the subject matter jurisdiction of the City Council, provided that no action may be taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. I understand we have 6 speakers this evening.
We now have 11 speakers.
All right. Tonight we'll allow 3 minutes per speaker. So first speaker is Greg Arrowsmith, followed by Craig Atanasio. And if the next speaker could make their way toward the front, be ready to go, that would be appreciated. Hi, Greg.
Hey, guys. Kathy, you've already heard this, so we're going to go over it again. This time we're focusing on the city. Starting with California Brown Act of 1953, enforcing local government agencies to be transparent with the taxpaying citizens. Tonight's focus, local public sector employees' retirement savings. I'm going to use City of Orange as an example. In 2024, total retirement and health contribution was $21,901,687, according to Malia M. Cohen, California State Controller. City of Orange has been in a financial hardship situation for over several years, which can place the taxpaying citizens in a negative position with the value of our properties, neighborhoods, community, and city. I'm recommending a new strategy for a retirement program for all of our city employees in Orange County and California, and actually anybody that's in here. This is a good program to start. We call it a 401k millionaire. Is an individual who has accumulated at least $1 million in their 401k retirement account, according to smartasset.com. Allow employees to contribute a portion of their salary on a pre-tax basis. This is the basic concept of compound and invest to grow their retirement accounts in a wealthy direction. Accumulation factor equals consistent contributions. Many 401k millionaires contribute over 17% of their pre-tax income. Keep that in mind, 17% each paycheck. Time in the market, the average age of 401k millionaire is around 59 years, with many having contributed for approximately 26 years. This shares the importance of starting early to benefit from compound interest. However, it is never too late to start. Diversification, allow wealth management companies to help diversify the employees' investments across the various assets such as stocks and bonds to mitigate risk and enhance growth potential. Replacement, the goal is to phase out retirement pensions. They're dying out down the road. You're getting less now. The folks in the future are gonna get less in the future. Social Security is dead, and other tax-based financial government programs that are a burden to the public sector agencies and the taxpaying citizens. Allow each public sector employee to take control and be responsible with their personal financial retirement plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Next up is Craig Atanasio, followed by Lori Cicina.
All right, good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. It's good to be back. I really appreciate all the work that you do. I've been married for 23 years. I love my wife. She's a good woman. I won the marriage lottery, but she won't even let me speak for 3 minutes nonstop. So I think I appreciate this opportunity. Now, I see you guys have a lot of responsibility. You got a city with a $150 million budget, over 600 employees, spread across 11 different departments, and you're in a lot of financial trouble. And I wish there was something I can do to help. And I think I have a suggestion. What I would like to see is that perhaps we can put together a committee of some of our leading citizens, and we could approach Elon Musk and have him send in Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency. I like the ring to that. They've got a group of 25-year-old tech bros can come into the City of Orange and just drain the swamp, root out all the waste, fraud, and abuse. And they even have one guy named Edward Korestein. You might have heard of him. He goes by the name of Big Balls. Why don't we send Big Balls to the Orange Police Department, and maybe he can work on the waste, fraud, and abuse over there. Can you imagine the look on Chief Javik's face when Big Balls shows up, a 20-year veteran? And by the way, this kid's just graduated from high school last year. And we've got him in Doge. controlling our federal government, which is 45,000 times the size of the city of Orange. Now, this is just insane. And I know some people here are on board with all of this, and it ain't right. The United States Constitution is the most important, greatest document ever written in the history of mankind. And we've got a six-time bankrupt, failed casino mogul with 43 felonies and a history of sexual scandal, basically pissing on it. And people are cheering this on. And I know some of this room are. And that ain't right. And I think it's time for some of our leaders to show some backbone, wake up and smell the coffee, and do something and say something about this. All right, well, thank you for your attention. I'll be back next month, and we can talk about annexing Canada, putting Trump up for a third term, and putting his likeness on Mount Rushmore. God bless America, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attention to this matter.
Thank you, Craig. Lori Cicina is up next, followed by James Cicina.
When the city of Orange hired its new city attorney earlier this year, she stated that the city of Orange must ensure the consistent and equitable application of the law. I am here because this has not happened. My family and I have lived in our home for many years, but our lives have been deeply affected by a dilapidated, illegal, non-permitted, detached structure more than 2,400 square feet, two stories high, only 16 inches from the property line. There are seven windows directly facing our home. This has completely taken away our privacy, peace, and the quiet enjoyment of our property. The city's zoning and planning department have failed to follow their own ordinance. This structure never went through zoning, planning, design review, OPA specific plan, nothing. That makes it an illegal, established, non-conforming structure. Over the years, the roof has been re-roofed three times, all without permits. Code enforcement called these maintenance projects. Even when 40 skylights were permanently removed and replaced haphazardly with clay cement tiles and ridge caps, the roof was engineered for acrylic skylights, not cement tiles. Under City of Orange Municipal Code, and you can look it up, 1738065, structural improvements on a non-conforming structure is not permitted. The city repeatedly again violated its own ordinance by allowing the permanent removal of nine sliding glass doors on the same structure, all on one wall. When I questioned this, code enforcement told me that nine sliding glass doors was not a structure, removing nine doors was not a structural change, but an improvement. The interpretation directly contradicts the city's own code and defies common sense. I spoke and emailed the city of the new remodel going on in January 3rd. It was completed at the end of January. The owners applied for a permit for the removal of the sliding glass doors on October 25th, and planning approved it 11 days later. That's 11 months after it was already completed. Alterations are not allowed per the city's building code for an illegal structure. When I met with the community director, Russell Brunham, I asked if someone from zoning could attend. He replied, "I am zoning," unquote. He also told me the roof would never be lowered to comply with the city code. When I mentioned flooding from the 20-foot roof with no rain gutters, he said it doesn't rain in California. He also just suggested to plant cypress trees.
Thank you, Lori. I'm sorry your time
is up.
That's okay. James Cicina can finish and follow up, followed by Robert Boyce.
Just to finish what my wife was saying, when he told her that it doesn't rain in Southern California, he then suggested that we plant cypress trees so we wouldn't have to look at it. It would cost us require 48 cypress trees to be planted 3 feet apart at a cost of over $99, not to mention all of the work and digging of the holes and so forth to plant them. And it would take years and years for those to be tall enough for us to not have to see this ugly structure, not to mention the maintenance and the watering of it during that whole period of time. It isn't feasible because not only can you can't plant trees on top of a septic tank that's 4 feet deep. We informed them that that was our septic tank area. And it would, the root system of those trees would go right into the septic tank area, and that is against code. I'm sure you all are aware of that. If this is how your staff enforces the law, then what message are you sending to the public? Are homeowners entitled to the same leniency as others? Can anyone now build illegally, skip zoning, and just call it maintenance? Because that's what's happened. This is not just about one property. This is about trust, accountability, and equal enforcement of the law and all of its ordinances in the city. When your own departments ignore the city ordinances, it undermines public confidence and violates the standards that you've said earlier tonight said you swore to uphold. The city's planning department should be held to a higher standard for knowing and applying these codes, for not just practical but also legal reasons. It ensures fair and consistent applications of the law. We are asking you respectfully, please investigate this matter again, fully. These revelations that we are now just finding out, such as this permit being 10 months or 11 months after the fact, does not bode well for the city. We hold your staff accountable for enforcing the zoning codes, which they were entrusted to do. Please restore the integrity to this city and its fairness to its citizens. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Following Robert Boyce is Ibrahim Akkari.
Mayor Slater, members of the Orange City Council. My name is Robert Boyce. I'm the current president of Old Town Preservation Association and one of the original formers of the organization. In 2010, the City Council adopted the current general plan. The accompanying environmental documents made it clear that without mitigation, the city could experience loss of historic resources. Those documents also identified specific mitigation measures, with most being required to be implemented between 2012 and 2014. To date, the vast majority of these commitments remain unfulfilled. Our understanding is that the next City Council meeting, you will be considering changes to the DRC, limiting its purview to historic resources. As you know, however, in November of 2024, the Council unanimously approved an MOU with Old Town Preservation Association and Orange Legacy Alliance to comprehensively address this very matter. Over the past year, we have met with staff repeatedly in advancing the MOU's deliverables. Despite our continued engagement, progress was slower than we anticipated. Recognizing the Council's desire to move forward on this, we have prepared and submitted to you an initial draft of a comprehensive preservation ordinance. That ordinance would replace the DRC with the Historic Resources Commission and would also fulfill many of the long-delayed mitigation measures the city committed to more than a decade ago. Also, each of you have received our concerns regarding the current direction. We have reached out to you individually in hopes of finding constructive solutions. We encourage each of you to take us up on that offer. Tonight, we respectfully ask that you postpone agendizing your recent directive. Instead, we ask that the staff be directed to refocus their efforts, re-engage with the working group, complete the final steps in bringing you a preservation ordinance in a timely manner, which is already a part of an environmental review, fully aligns with the general plan, and completely complies with state law. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob. Following Ibrahim is Doug Redding.
Hello, guys. My name is Ibrahim Akari. It was really cool to see the youth involved in the beginning. I always like to see this. In the past 2 years, I live in the city of Orange. I've been broken in twice. Nobody's been harmed, except my money, obviously. I probably have two reasons why I would think people are breaking my house. Number one, I'm a reconstructive surgeon at UCI. I'm one of the only surgeons that give care to uninsured people. So if the ER calls for someone that's uninsured, I take it. I'm the only one who take it. Those people tend to tell their friends, and believe it or not, people follow me to my house to seek for medical advice. Second reason is my financial irresponsibility. I have supercars parked in front of my house, Lamborghinis, Ferraris, you name it. My kids are not going to college, that's for sure. We tried to put bushes, put my picture to scare them, nothing works. So we suggested to put fences. And I've been to the city multiple times to go over 42 inches because 42 inches is the limit you can go in the front and the first 20 feet on the sides. However, someone can jump that easily. Even my daughter just jumped it and laughed at me. There is exemption, or I guess it's called variance, where you can apply for the first 20 feet and the back of the backyard to go over 42 inches. However, there's in the code, there's nothing that mentions the front. And I asked the people, I will not name names, but they were all amazing, about what about the front. They said it's not mentioned in the code. If it's not mentioned, it means that you should probably not do it to go over 42 inches. Now I'm asking to go 5 feet probably, something where someone could not jump over and ask me medical advice or break in my house again. I'm to a point where I want to leave the city of Orange or sell my cars or even stop taking uninsured patients at all the UCI, Lakewood, LaSalle, Irvine. We don't feel safe in the house, to be honest, anymore. I have two kids and I have one wife. And they don't feel safe at home. They keep telling me every time the ring system rings, oh, who is this? We live in constant stress. My neighbors do not live in this constant stress. I understand it's a call-based system in the city of Orange, and there is one person that keeps calling for some reason. I won't get into it, but I'd like for someone to look into it and see if we can do something with the front.
Thank you, Abraham.
Okay, all right.
Following Doug Redding is Brandy Romero.
Hello, Mayor and Council and staff. Thanks for having me again. My name is Doug Redding, and for possibly the last time, I'm representing the Wall That Heals. If I could just borrow your imagination for a moment, just lean in with me here. Imagine it's a cold, dark night. It's calm. There's a big park. It's quiet. And there's a man standing in this park by himself, and he's a stoic man. Imagine someone who instantly earns the respect of people he's around. And he's standing there, and this man is sobbing, and he's crying, and he's also healing. And the reason why is because he's standing in front of a wall that's a 3/4 scale version of the Vietnam Wall. And that wall has all 58,281 names, same as the wall exhibit in D.C. And that's exactly what happened last week in the city of Orange at Grijalva Park. We had over 5,000 people visit the wall. It was an incredibly emotional experience for, I think, most that showed up, and many of you showed up, thank you. And I just want to use this 2 minutes left to share my experience with bringing the wall to Orange, because I probably talked to someone from every council person's district, and I know that I annoyed a lot of people, and I know that a lot of people really stepped up, and I've said this before. It just seemed like from a business perspective when the answer probably should have been no, or not this time, It just somehow found yes. And that was my experience over and over again with the city. From, I'm not going to name names because I know that I won't get everyone and that's not fair. But from Public Works to OPD, OFD, people in, you know, next door, the I don't remember the name of the building over there now, but I think it's like Public Works or, you know, just about everybody involved. As a matter of fact, today I had to finally fill out an application for a banner after the fact because the city was willing to work with us and make this event happen. We had over 358 volunteers show up, and we have been working on it since basically January of this year. When I started the project, I was 31, and now I'm 51. I don't know how that happened, but it was an incredible event, and it could not have happened without multiple pieces of the city stepping up. And so I just wanted to share that. That's the big takeaway here, is I'm so proud of the city, from the community, and from the staff for stepping up. I know it's a hard time to do your job these days, but I was extremely impressed, and I wanted to give the respect and the dues where they are deserved to be. So thank you.
Thank you, Doug. On behalf of the council, thank you so much for your efforts on behalf of the Wall That Heals. Following Brandy is Mary Oberschlake.
Good evening, Mayor Slater and City Council members. I'm here tonight because I created a petition that I had all the merchants throughout the plaza sign. I had the privilege a couple weeks ago of walking with our new city manager, Jared Hildenbrand, and touring our downtown area. Our sidewalks are absolutely filthy, and it's become a sanitation issue. I recently, this is TMI, but recently a human being defecated in front of our store that we had to clean up. We also have a lot of dog urine and dog feces throughout the plaza. I know we've had quite a few city council members out, as well as Mayor Slater, to kind of look at the sidewalks and what's happening. So when we cut the sanitizing of the sidewalks on that fateful night when we cut everything and it was 2 a.m, I don't think that we realized how bad our downtown area would get, and it's been over a year now. And so when Street Fair came to sanitize the streets, after Street Fair, the sidewalks are pristine normally. Well, this year, they were still filthy. So we have filth being baked on top of filth because we're not sanitizing them. The downtown area is our second sales tax generator in the city. We have tons of tourism and visitors coming to visit us all the time. If it smells like urine and feces, I don't feel like people are going to look at us like a place they want to go and visit and spend their money. So I had the merchants sign a petition to submit. I do have a lot of photos I could submit. I decided not to because they're pretty disgusting. But I want to submit this petition and talk about perhaps agendizing, bringing back the sanitizing of the sidewalks. Now that we have the parking meters coming in, perhaps we could use some of those funds to bring back sanitizing, even if it's at halftime from what we used to do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brandy. Following Mary is Michael Ristig.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem, council members. I wanted to bring something to your attention, perhaps you're not aware. On Tuesday, September 10th, city council members in Costa Mesa voted 5-2 to launch a $200,000 immigrant legal defense fund and contract primarily with Immigration Defenders Law Center to help residents and anyone who's detained by ICE within the city's boundaries. Mayor John Stevens, who made a motion initially for a $150,000 fund, also called for the Public Law Center to serve as a secondary legal provider to open the fund up to outside donations and for staff to update them on it once there was $50,000 left in the fund. Stevens, who is an attorney, said that the undocumented immigrants are not provided lawyers by the government like citizens are under the Constitution, regardless of their alleged crime. This is a matter of access to justice, plain and simple, he said at the meeting. These folks are being detained allegedly because they violated some immigration law. They have none of that. They don't have any access to justice. The government is taking them, but the government is not defending them. A majority of council members are also supporting a federal lawsuit filed by the ACLU and a host of immigrant advocacy groups on behalf of five Los Angeles residents, alleging federal agents are racially profiling people to make warrantless deportation arrests. Costa Mesa. This is what a responsive and responsible representative assembly does in the face of government overreach. I urge you to take action, their actions, into consideration. Your continued inaction in response to citizen participation is dismaying. And I want to leave you with this thought. I'm sure you're going to recognize that. This. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, do ordain and establish the Constitution of the United States of America. Our federal government is violating the Constitution. It's we, the people, that have to do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. After Michael is Adrian Gladson.
Hello, Mayor, council members. So in response to the residents' concerns, the city of Anaheim has taken the following actions. The city has joined the federal lawsuit brought by the ACLU challenging the widespread attacks by armed and masked federal agents across the Southland. Community monitoring, the city of Anaheim created the website anaheim.net/contigo to track and report ICE activity in the city and region. Community involvement, residents contribute to the website by reporting ICE raids and operations. The purpose of the initiative aims to protect residents by providing real-time information about ICE operations. The website is up and running, demonstrating that the city of Anaheim City Council responds to the needs and demands of their residents. I urge the city council to listen to the many people from all stripes of society, to faith leaders and clergy, to the many concerned that attend these meetings, and most importantly, to the youth of Orange, the future of our city. They are your future, elected officials, and you are failing them. What you do will not be forgotten. Here are some actions taken by the city council of our neighbors in Santa Ana. City of Santa Ana actions, federal lawsuit. The city of Santa Ana joined a federal lawsuit to challenge the actions of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Non-participation in enforcement. The Santa Ana Police Department does not and will not participate in immigration enforcement efforts adhering to the California Values Act. Community support. The city has stated its commitment to upholding the rights and safety of all residents and provided resources for immigrants to understand their rights. ICE contract termination. Santa Ana previously terminated a contract with ICE for holding detainees in 2017 and has not reinstated it. I urge the City Council of Orange to follow the example of this responsible elected body and take similar actions to affirm their commitment to democracy and against intrusive, illegal, and immoral actions by an out-of-control federal government. July 17th. Official Santa Ana website reaffirms non-cooperation with ICE and adherence to Senate Bill 54, California Values Act again. As has been communicated multiple times, the City of Santa Ana and Santa Ana Police Department do not and will not participate in or assist with ICE immigration enforcement in full compliance with SB 54. The city has no contracts with ICE, including holding immigration detainees in our jail, their jail. The city's contract with ICE, yada, yada, I already said that. Orange City Council members, I urge you again to follow the law, specifically SB 54, your continued inaction against federal government overreach in a moment that will live in infamy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Adrian Gladson.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. I like the lineup here with all of you. Nice to speak to you this evening, and just wanted to give you a little bit of a background. Last Thursday, I discussed touch base with staff because I've been learning about the economic roundtable and found out that that group was going to meet on Monday. But I was told that it was a closed group. I was not allowed to attend on Monday morning, which actually wasn't great news to hear. It didn't make me happy. And I got a little, you know, heated up and all that. And I calmed myself down a little and said, let's take a look at something else to divert my attention. Let's go back to the Grant Thornton report and start looking at that again, read some more information. And even that started kind of getting me angry because I looked at page 39 and a comment number 6. I won't read that to you. This is not the place to do that. But it's just another example of areas where things get put into documentation that are false and are not correct, and we do need to correct them. And then I remembered on Saturday, our new city manager said to us he was going to come back to us in November with his plan for the economic vision and number of the solutions that could come, his strategy for the Grant Thornton study. So I said, okay, I'm going to let that process be what it is. I trust and have faith that that's going to be cool and what we're going to learn. So I went back and decided let's switch the tables and look at the topic that the report basically touched on. And I sent you an electronic comment on this, which is they identify Costco as the number one commercial / retail person or entity or business to get to Orange. And I sent you an email and electronic comment that was referencing 2013, where folks were asking, is Costco coming to Orange? And I'm sure all of you remember this was discussed even in the 90s. So none of this is new. And we all know what it is, but I started delving into Costco. And Costco has 132 stores in California, warehouses. It's actually 143. There's several slated for new construction. There's 34 in Texas, and there's 33 in Washington State, and there's 20 in Mexico. Wow. We are the state that has Costco's. So I threw a suggestion on a group that I think we should put together and go back, figure out what we can learn from the past, and let's figure out how to get them here. Get them here. We need this sales tax revenue. They generate $260 million in each store. We know what that'll mean to Orange.
Thank you. Thank you, Adrian. That is the public comments. Next is item 3, the consent calendar. Do any of my colleagues have any items they'd like to remove for discussion or questions? Councilmember Gutierrez. Oh, I'm sorry, you're moving to approve the consent calendar.
Yes.
Thank you very much. We have a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bilodeau. Seeing no other discussion, I'll call for the vote. Consent calendar is approved unanimously. Item 4, reports from Mayor Slater. All I want to do is thank Rick Olson. I don't see him in the audience this evening, but Rick Olson heads up Love Orange, and last week he helped conduct an extremely successful citywide volunteer effort, and they went out and they did a whole lot of work and cleaning up the city of Orange. So just wanted to personally thank and congratulate Rick Olson and his Love Orange team. Reports from council members. Any council members have anything to report? I think Kathy might have one. Councilmember Barrios.
I just wanted to echo what you were saying because I was actually out there that morning, and I've been to every single one since they've started. It was the biggest crowd I've ever seen. So more volunteers, more projects. I mean, Rick has really tapped into the heart of the city and what people are really looking for that kind of service, and it was just really amazing. And to see all the, I see Cammy Kenyon here who works with the students, the kids, their energy that early in the morning really impressed me, but they were great, and it was just really wonderful. And a lot of other groups too, they're, you know, helping and getting their information out. It was really a great day.
Fantastic. We love our volunteers. Councilmember Gutierrez.
And I want to piggyback on Mr. Redding. I wanted to thank you, Mr. Redding, and your wife, the Elks Club, Love Orange, and other people that were also on your board to bring the Wall that Heals to Orange. And even initially, I know it was going to be at the dog park. That didn't work out. So even thanks to the dog park for wanting initially to have it there. But I am very appreciative that that wall came to our city. Somehow I missed it in 2011 when it was at your park. But it was an emotional and educational experience. And I was there on Friday for a little personal tour. And then I volunteered on Saturday morning from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And there was four Orange High Junior ROTCs there at 6 a.m. volunteering with me that early in the morning. And I learned so much. And more than anything, I learned how much it was doing exactly what its purpose was. It was to heal these veterans. And I've met quite a few of them, that some of them were willing to tell their stories, some of them were willing to tell them gladly, and others with tears in their eyes and sobbing. And I also met some groupies that follow the wall. And one of them was a combat medic, and he goes by the name Doc, and the other one was named Dennis, and he was in the Air Force. And they follow not only this wall, but they follow other walls. And they do this as a volunteer basis. They are just there to meet the public, to talk to them about how to find a loved one on the wall, and just to talk them through any experiences and tell them more of what's on the mobile museum. It was an emotional day. It was an emotional experience, and I just wanted to share that. And what I also found out from Doug's wife is that the granite that was used for the actual monument in DC was supplied by our own MSI here in Orange, and at that time they weren't here at Orange just yet. They came to Orange 3 years later. So what a way to bring it full circle. So I wanted to thank you again, and what a great experience, and I hope that we can bring it back again. And I also asked for I have some staff comments that I would like to make in regards to, I saw that the notice for the public hearing for October 28th in regards to the design review alterations to the design review committee, to streamline the design review process. And in preparation for that, I was hoping I could have a couple of things clarified before that meeting for all of us, if that's possible. One of the things was I wanted to know what is the criteria that the community development director will be using to determine the potential historical significance of structures? And then secondly, what qualifications will the community development director need in order to make those decisions? And then thirdly, since this new ordinance is proposing that the development community development director, will be able to make these decisions for the design review for non-historic and demolition permit non-historics, with an exception of restricted to certain applications. I would not want clarification as to what are those certain applications. And then lastly, as a public speaker spoke about this, we received a letter from Carstens, Black, and Minters dated September 5th. And I want to know what our response is to this letter. Is there any response that we should give? Is there anything that we should first stop and analyze in this letter that's being brought forward? So I just want those answers before our next meeting on the 28th, when that's being brought forward to us. And then also, can I also get a status on how we're progressing with our Heritage Commission ordinance and our new Mills Act program as well, how that's going as well? And I think that's it. Thank you.
I think he's got it. Thank you, Councilmember Gutierrez. Mayor Pro Tem Bilodeau.
Yes, I wanted to report that as your representative on the transportation corridor agencies. We took actions this last month. First, we had contracted with UC Davis to do an assessment of our wildlife versus vehicle interactions on the toll roads. As a result, they identified areas where enhanced fencing could be useful, because unfortunately we have mountain lions, deer, and coyotes that make their way into the roadway. So you'll see going forward in the future more fencing being erected on the 241, the 261, and the 73. And then also we took action to expand our disabled veteran program. So disabled veterans can actually sign up and they receive free tolls on the toll road. So that's something that the public should be aware of. And if you're a disabled veteran, you're encouraged to sign up. Lastly, I wanted to report that in another hat that I wear as the president of the Orange County Water District, I had the privilege of receiving a visit from a gentleman from Saudi Arabia that is the head of the Saudi Arabian Water Authority. And his title is His Excellency, which I told the staff as the president, I really thought that title was kind of growing on me, but they didn't think it was funny. But anyways, like much of you, I could see. But anyways, Saudi Arabia has very advanced water desalinization programs, but they came to see us, though, because here in Fountain Valley, we have the largest and most advanced water recycling facility in the world, and they're looking to emulate that. So, and that's my report.
Very well, thank you.
We might not have a Costco mayor, but we do have a Trader Joe's. And I'm proud to announce that tomorrow in District 3, hopefully what will be the first domino to fall in the redevelopment. The new Trader Joe's, the expanded Trader Joe's, will be open at 8 a.m. As many are aware, CVS took that little pill box and walked their merry way away. And Trader Joe's took the lease over. So there's gonna be a new and improved and large Trader Joe's opening tomorrow at 8 a.m. So I hope everybody can spend some money there. And also, I know that this week there's a birthday with our colleague, Anna Gutierrez, so I just wanted to wish her happy birthday.
Oh.
Thank you.
When is that?
Thursday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
And thank you for that exciting report, Councilmember Tavaleros. I happened to be at the old tired Trader Joe's this afternoon, and the manager let me peek into the new one opening tomorrow, and I'm telling you, that is one gorgeous store, so check it out. Any other announcements, council members? All right. Any AB 1234 reports? Hearing none. Item 7, reports from city manager. Code enforcement and tobacco ordinance update.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Mayor. As requested by the City Council, here tonight is Mr. Perez, our code compliance manager, who will provide an update on code enforcement and the city's tobacco ordinance.
Great. Good evening, Mayor, City Council. Thank you for your continued support and for recognizing Code Enforcement Officer Appreciation Week. I'm honored to represent the city's code enforcement division, a dedicated team consisting of one senior code enforcement officer, five full-time code enforcement officers, two part-time officers, and then two code enforcement technicians. Our code enforcement officers are assigned to five geographical beats and are responsible for investigating and enforcing a wide range of city, county, and state laws. Our code enforcement technicians serve as a first point of contact, managing complaint intake through Orange 24/7 app, as well as in person and by telephone. Code enforcement officers handle hundreds of complaints, as shown here. I've categorized the most common issues into the following groups. So as you'll see, property maintenance is certainly our key cornerstone of complaints that we typically receive. And it can be from a property that's not maintaining its paint on the building, green pools, overgrown vegetation, loud noise, properties that essentially are blighted. The other category is illegal construction. We see quite a bit of construction of illegal ADUs, even though there's a a method that's providing them with the ability to legalize accessory dwelling units, but yet we still see garage conversions, unsafe buildings, vacant buildings specifically. And then, you know, in terms of business regulations, we see and regulate sidewalk vendors, food trucks, as you'll see a number of them at different hours throughout the city. We now regulate tobacco retailers, and I'll have further discussion on that, massage establishments, and just really any licensed or unpermitted businesses or businesses that that are regulated through conditional use permit. We also regulate or deal with substandard housing, unsafe living conditions. Many of those, as you'll see, you know, that could be an individual who, you know, unfortunately has some financial situation or some mental illness, or they're, you know, where they're not able to provide adequate access into their home. They, you know, they lack basic necessities, water, power, or they just have an overabundant collection of items that they don't know what to do with it, and it ends up somewhere either in the house or in the backyard. We also deal with land use issues. Some of the more common ones that we deal with regularly now are, you know, fraternity, sorority, group homes, boarding homes, and you'll see at any one of these locations where they'll cram as many occupants into, like in the picture you'll see there, you know, three beds in one room. Sometimes we see more. The other is our historic property preservation standards, and that's really working with our planning department. That is a location is gearing to do some improvements, that they do everything they can to preserve a lot of the material on site and then try to utilize it, but also dealing when there's illegal construction or enhancements that people tend to, you know, kind of fall to the nature of outside of the district, where, you know, you might want to put some upgraded windows. But in a historic property, you know, you really have to stay to the historic standards. And so we deal with, you know, a lot of those types of issues. We also collaborate with internally as well as externally. But, you know, just some highlight of some of the areas where we provide resources and services. So at a lot of our college campuses, when they have career or job fairs or opportunities to interact with the youth, we will set up information booths. We work with our city prosecutor's office to prosecute those offenders who don't maintain the community standards. We work quite closely with our police department, whether it's a drug house, whether it's a cannabis dispensary, or it's a vacant building that's, you know, becoming a hub for graffiti or vandals or homelessness. We also work providing support to our housing division through annual inspections of multi-family properties with enforceable affordability covenants. These maintain some quality of life standards that basically through the that are funded through projects of the home and housing set aside program. We work with our building department. As you'll see, you know, when cars unfortunately veer off the road and end up in a building, or a building catches fire, we have a great fire department that will put out the fire and certainly deal with the aftermath of stabilizing the building. But then it gets handed over to our building and to code enforcement to require that it be secured, that it be maintained, and then certainly working towards compliance in terms of getting it rebuilt. We work with our planning division. Our planning division folks, when there's a project, a new project coming in, or there's an existing business where there may be noise impacts, or where there may be land use entitlement issues, we work to collaborate with them and to try to get ahead of those issues. And lastly, if I may, October marks National Planning Month, and we're honored. We're honoring the impact of thoughtful planning on community development. Next slide. And now to tobacco. Tobacco ordinance is a new program that certainly took effect in July of this year. We had at the time of the ordinance, we had 104. We're still working through the process of seeing a number of applications coming through that we're trying to meet the deadline of September 25th when the ordinance in its entirety took effect. So we've seen an increase of a number of tobacco establishments that were selling tobacco, just did not have the appropriate licenses that were required under state law. But now, realizing that they're going to be coming into a local regulatory authority, have now started to apply. So we've seen an uptick from 104 to 108, and we're still processing a number of other businesses. With that, the discussion that came up was related to ancillary versus significant. And basically what it comes down to or boils down to is a ancillary is one where it could be a gas station convenience store that has a small area of display, such as 20% of display area dedicated to tobacco, whereas the majority of their operation is to general goods and services. And then versus an ancillary, which is the entire store wall to wall is nothing but tobacco and tobacco products and paraphernalia. In terms of the fee structure, currently the fee is at $880. That's what was adopted. In terms of lowering or creating a lower tiered effect, the goal of any tobacco program is that your goal is to minimize tobacco getting in the hands of minors. That's number one. And number two is the ability to regulate, to utilize that fee to regulate prohibited tobacco products that have been banned by the state or the federal government, or to regulate local control such as nitrous oxide, drug paraphernalia, and other things that we have established a standard that in any, whether it's ancillary or significant, we would prohibit those types of products. In terms of self-certification, all businesses, as they go through the application, which is now all online, and it's a seamless process where it allows them to kind of input information and check a few boxes, they're already self-certifying as to the degree of items that they're prohibited from selling. And so as long as they declare that they're not selling those items, or they declare it, and then ultimately as part of the enforcement mechanism, we would contact them. They're already self-certifying. And that concludes my report. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Perez. Any council members have any questions? Councilmember Barrios?
One of the things that just came up to me, and I just can't remember from our ordinance, it was the presentation that you gave about all the number of other things that they're selling in addition. So like you mentioned, drug paraphernalia. And particularly with the vape shops where you have such an expanded group of merchandise, which in some cases includes the not nitrous oxide, as well as things that are tobacco alternatives. And I just want to make sure that like we're not leaving anything out in terms of our verbiage. So for example, and there's nothing I can do to stop him because he's an adult. My son uses those nicotine, they're like nicotine, like chew. Yes, thank you. He knows. What is it called? I'm not going to ask how you know. So, but it wouldn't necessarily fall under tobacco, but it's in the same vein. And so I'm just wondering, have you left yourself room to encompass those things?
Yes. So as part of this ordinance, we have adopted additional regulations that if there are any other imposed regulations at the state, county, or federal level, then they automatically become part of our program.
And you did give us an update about some of the things that the county had brought forward in terms of what they're already looking at. And so you had mentioned something else, another supplement or something that you were just totally ahead of the curve of on that. Because now I'm just hearing it in other places. So I just wanted to thank you for that. Absolutely. That you're always seem to be thinking ahead, and it's what we need.
Thank you.
Anyone else? All right, Raphael, thank you for an excellent report. Great. Really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
All right, administrative reports. Item 8.1 is the establishment of prospective establishment of permit parking area AE to be comprised of the west side of North Pixley Street from Chapman Avenue to Maple Avenue, and both sides of North Parker Street from Chapman Avenue to Maple Avenue, adjacent to residential land uses, resolution number 11636. Would any of my colleagues like a staff report on this? Any questions of staff from the council? Very well, any public speakers?
None, Mayor.
We have none. We already have a motion to approve by Councilmember Gutierrez, second by Councilmember Gillenhammer. Any further discussion? Seeing none, please vote. That is approved unanimously. Item 9.1, Legal Affairs. Yes?
I just wanted to thank staff so much for working with the neighbors on this, because this came out of the church that moved right into that area, and we knew at the time that it was going to be a problem. And so as soon as the neighbors talked, you know, said, we're having a problem, staff stepped right in and took care of them. So thank you to all the staff that helped. I really appreciate you stepping right up for them. And thank you to the neighbors.
Thank you for noting that. Okay, 9.1, Legal Affairs, introduction, first reading of an ordinance amending Title 15 of the Orange Municipal Code, adopting and amending 2025 editions of the California Building Standards Codes, 2025 California Building, the 2025 California Residential Code, 2025 California Plumbing Code, 2025 California Green Building Code, and the 2025 California Electrical Code, Resolution Number 11637, and Ordinance Number 16-25 will be considered. Would anyone like a staff report? Any questions of staff? Seeing none, we have a motion from Councilmember Barrios to approve these items, and a second from Councilmember Gutierrez. The maker of the motion must read the ordinance title as listed in the recommended action.
Adopt resolution number 11637. Is it that one that suggested that action?
The ordinance. No.
The ordinance.
Where's the ordinance?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. Adopt resolution number 11. Oh, I'm sorry. I move that we adopt resolution number 11. Jennifer's still looking at me. So the second one, introduce and conduct first reading of ordinance number 1625, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Orange amending Title 15 of the Orange Municipal Code, adopting and amending the 2025 editions of the California Building Standards Codes and related model codes with appendices relating to the building codes. And set November 12, 2025 at 6 p.m. as the date and time for the public hearing to consider the second reading and adoption of ordinance number 1625.
Very well. Please vote.
For awesome hand signals.
Approved unanimously. Item 9.2 is introduction and first reading of an ordinance adopting the 2025 California Wildland Urban Interface Code and the 2025 California Fire Code, adding Chapter 15.31 and amending Chapter 15.32 of the Orange Municipal Code. The items for consideration are resolutions number 11638 and ordinance number 17-25. Would any of my colleagues like a staff report? Any questions of staff? Any public speakers?
None, Mayor.
We have a motion from Councilmember Gutierrez and a second from Councilmember Gillenhammer to pass the resolution and the ordinance. And would the maker of the motion please read the ordinance title as listed in the recommended action?
A motion to introduce and conduct first reading of ordinance number 17-25, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Orange adding Chapter 15.31 of the Orange Municipal Code to add the City of Orange Wildland Urban Interface Code and repealing and replacing Chapter 15.32 of the Orange Municipal Code to update the City of Orange Fire Code, and then set November 12, 2025 at 6 p.m. as a date and time for a public hearing to consider the second reading and adoption of ordinance number 17-25.
Please vote. That is approved unanimously. The next regular City Council meeting will be held on Tuesday, October 28th, 2025 at 6 p.m. in the Council Chamber with closed session beginning at 5 p.m. This meeting is now adjourned.